people who have been interviewing me about the film, other than French journalists who get right to the point, feel, you know, always talk about the violence in Running Scared, but it actually has a very provocative sex scene early on in the film that people tend to overlook. And, I mean, I would almost go to say as far as the sex scene in Running Scared is more provocative than anything that was in the cooler. I mean, it's pretty damn realistic. And I guess that speaks to the tone of where the film goes from there in the intensity that people really do think of it as just mainly a shocking, violent film. But to answer the second part of the first part of your question, when we submitted the cooler to the MPAA, it had already gone to the festival, so it was a finished film. And having them come back and say NC-17, it was really expensive and problematic. And the producers of Running Scared, they knew we had a very troubling film for the MPAA right up, and they suggested to me that I submit it early and see what they consider the problem areas, because, you know, we weren't kidding ourselves. We knew that it would be quite shocking to them. Mm-hmm. And I think when you tend to work with the MPAA, when you consult them early, you have a little bit more leeway to make your case to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something Quentin Tarantino talks about, too. Mm-hmm. If you sort of treat them sort of like the adversary instead of trying to befriend them and get your point across to them, I think you have a better shot of getting away with what you want. And in this case, they came back initially and they had, usually they don't say you've got to cut this, they have some questions. One of the things they were curious about was they thought they couldn't quite see from the DVD, but the sex scene seemed a little explicit for them. And I explained to them that it was going to be seen in a very noirish fashion, which was going to be it was going to be quite dark. Mm-hmm. And they wanted us to lighten up the scene and resubmit it to them. So we did that, and they came back and they said that it was okay, which was quite surprising to me because I knew I thought it was pretty provocative. And then in terms of some of the violence, you know, this is another symptom of filmmakers having to deal with the MPAA, is I think you get paranoid about what their reaction is going to be to your movie, and on some, whether it be a conscious or subconscious level, you tend to shoot more, and you tend to cut more in.
Uh-huh, right.
And I think Scorsese has talked about this, and other filmmakers, where you just kind of feel you're going to get dialed back by these guys, so why approach them sort of with the perfect cut in your mind? You tend to feel, let me submit early, before I've refined this thing, and let me see what they have to say.
Sure.
And, mm-hmm. It's interesting because at the end of the day, this would be unusual for me to say, having gone down the road on the cooler and had a bumpy relationship with them, but I have to say at the end of the day, I got exactly the cut of Running Scared that I wanted. I mean, this is not a film.
Right.
That you're going to see on DVD three months from now in an unrated cut. I got everything in this cut, and I got the R on it. And I don't, I mean, having seen the movie, I think you can admit it couldn't be much more extreme.
Right, yeah. You must have anticipated in doing this that obviously people that loved and supported your earlier film would have a reaction like, whoa, what's this? I presume that like any canny filmmaker, you did this switch away in the same way that, let's say, Dustin Hoffman, after making a big impact in The Graduate, decided to play Ratso Rizzo in Midnight Cowboy. It's the same kind of move. It's like going all the way to the other side to kind of, show that you have range and that you're not just about smallish, sensitive movies about, emotions. Was that part of the thing? Or?
I mean, to be honest, I think it was less calculated than that and more like I didn't want to repeat myself. I didn't want to go and do a more intimate character drama like The Cooler, as much as I love it, and we'll do movies like that in the future again. I've always had a love for gritty, propulsive thrillers, and it's kind of like what you talked about. The days of being able to do sort of a more lethargic kind of crime film like Point Blank or Get Carter, the pacing of those films doesn't fly with studio mentality anymore, or maybe even modern audiences weaned on MTV, I think.
Yeah.
I think you do need to get a little bit more stylized and modernistic
right.
Because the studios or the people that judge these films tend to be so much about the pacing today.
Yeah.
So you know, I love the genre of the film. I definitely wanted to attack something different and do show that I had the range. Show that I had the range to play with the big boys in terms of the influences of guys like De Palma or Fincher or Michael Mann.
Yeah.
But it was purely from a position of love of this kind of film, you know, love of the gangster film and the tough guy film and the Peckinpah film, and more recently films maybe like Man on Fire and Training Day.
Yeah.
But obviously bringing my own sensibility to it and whatever subtext to it that I wanted to bury in the film. You know, I was very aware that this was going to be a subversive film, because anytime you present a mainstream American film with child endangerment, you know, enormous amounts of profanity, graphic violence, but packaged in what I would consider an entertaining mainstream format. You know, it's not an art movie, but I would hope that it's considered artistically done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's unquestionable. That's what my big liking for this thing is, that it's so. To me, it's all about the discipline of the MacGuffin thing. It's always there. It's very carefully. You know, your film, in some ways, reminds me of that Australian director, Richard Franklin, who was a Hitchcock adherent. And he kind of ran off the rails there. But he was a very, very disciplined filmmaker who stuck to the thread of it and was very, very exacting in it and making it all kind of pay off. So there's no sense of, let's just shoot this scene because it feels exciting and it'll enthrall people. There's always the sense that you're thinking very carefully and tracking the turns in a very exacting way, which is what I felt very good about, because you really worked on this and got it right.
Yeah, I definitely I come from a screenwriting background. I mean, I've always wanted to be a director, and I always saw that, you know, whether it be writing or directing, is just sort of pure filmmaking.
Yeah.
But I definitely put a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into crafting of the screenplay.
Yeah.
And also, you know, my films, whether somebody likes them or not, takes place in a very cinematic universe.
Yeah.
I strive for realism, but I also understand that I'm going to be throwing sort of conventions of plot of people, or what they might consider maybe stereotypical elements or, you know, cliched elements. But really, I think it's just familiarity with situations. I mean, if you're doing a mob world and you're setting it in New Jersey, you're going to run into these type of characters. But I would also hope that the film takes left turns that the audience cannot predict. And, you know, I know you maybe had a difference of opinion about the Des and Adele sequence, the pedophile apartment, and questioned whether that was too much of a different kind of scene for the film. But nothing surprised. I love nothing more than to see a movie where, A, I suddenly get taken in a completely 180 direction,
yeah,
and go, this is pretty interesting. And then also seeing a secondary character step up to the forefront and command a good chunk of the movie. I think that goes against convention, even though it's taking place in a conventional world.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely hear what you're saying, and you're right. It does do something. I mean, you know, one is accustomed to the lead character carrying it all the way through, and so yeah, it was fascinating. I thought it was a good piece. I just I didn't believe, I guess is what I'm saying, that Vera Farmiga's character had it in her to wreak vengeance in that way, but it was okay, you know.
You know, I mean, she's a mob wife. I'm not saying that gives her any criteria to blow people away, but I don't think you approach it from the mob wife aspect. I think she's a mother.
Right.
You know, and I think if Paul Walker came in and had to deal with that, I think he's still thinking about saving his hide, and he might have just walked out of that apartment or maybe beaten the crap out of her, but I think something primal got stirred in her, and she just realized she didn't want these people sharing the same planet as her. And, you know, I that scene gets enormous applause in the theater because I think everybody's tapped into it. I think the audience is saying, do it, do it, do it.
Right.
And I have to believe there's a good percentage of people who, while facing down these evil scumbags, would think, you know what, I don't want to put this through 6 years of court cases and having them ever see light of day. I'm just going to take care of it right now. And the fact that she was from a mob background, kind of a... you know, I don't know, a more you know, how can I say, less cynical, like Soprano wife.
Right.
You know, I think she acted, but I don't think she could have predicted even, I think if somebody had told her, this is what you're going to find in this apartment, I don't think she would have predicted she would have,
mm-hmm.
she would have acted out the way she did. And I think, I like that about her, is that in the split second, in the moment, she suddenly decides that she's going to act on this, and it would probably haunt her for the rest of her life.
How did you happen to cast Vera Farmiga? I presume it had nothing to do with having seen her in that fascinating, totally first-rate junkie movie that she did that nobody really, or did it? Did you see that? Was that what did it for you?
You know, it's a couple of things. I did see Down to the Bone.
Yeah.
I was sent it by her agent when I was considering her,
yeah.
And I tell you, I worship at the altar of that film.
I think
it's a travesty that she wasn't nominated for an Academy
yeah.
Award for that film. I think it's one of the best, if not the best, performances I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, that seeing that movie validated my decision, which was already to cast her, or I was very intrigued by her, because Vera had been interested. She came to my attention, first of all, I saw her in 15 minutes, and I remembered her from that film, but she came to my attention because she was vying for the Maria Bella role in The Cooler, and I had thought she was a little young for it at the time,
mm-hmm.
and but I always remembered her, and I always remembered how passionately she lobbied for the role, and I tracked her career. You know, I sometimes when you pass on an actor for a role, they get a little bit resentful, but they don't think that the director only has good intentions in terms of what he wants to do with his film. And everything that Vera did, I watched, and I loved her in Dummy. And when her name came, I only really considered two actors for that role. And when I met Vera, it was just a slam dunk, because I can't say enough amazing things about her. I think she's going to be a huge star, especially on the tail of Running Scared. She's coming out in The Departed and Breaking and Entering.
Mm.
But I think she's the best actor I've ever worked with. I think her natural instincts and her skill is just unbelievable. And I still remember watching Down to the Bone and seeing that scene where she's hungover in the morning, and the kids come into the kitchen, and the one kid puts a snake over her shoulders, and just sort of her body language of, like,
yeah.
you know, how she tells the kid to take the snake, and she grabs the breakfast and she sends them out. I just saw the attitude that I was looking for. So I think she's the hardest find around, and she's a chameleon-like actress. She's like Cate Blanchett. She can
right.
go from being absolutely gorgeous to plain to... But she's just got such an interesting face for me. It's like a beautiful Picasso.
Yeah. You know, it's funny about Walker, though. I was thinking about him in the context of Eight Below, and I saw that. I immediately associated Eight Below with the Cuba Gooding movie, Snow Dogs. And I thought to myself, oh my God, why is he making this, you know, what looks like a sappy Disney family film? I questioned his judgment right away, but that was before people started to see it. He said, you know, this is actually a half-decent little film. You know, it's not sappy, it's not, you know, it's not quote-unquote, you know, when you hear the term family film, it means, you know, perhaps not made by the best people, but it's not true. I finally caught up with it last weekend. And did he do your film as a kind of a balancer to Eight Below? I'm sure that there's a connection here.
Well, the story is that I haven't seen Eight Below yet. I'm going to go try and see it this weekend. The story is that Paul did Running Scared first,
right.
And I remember because Frank Marshall wanted to see it, and he was considering Paul.
Uh-huh.
But apparently Paul showed his mom an AFM trailer of Running Scared, and it absolutely freaked her out. And she was like, oh, my son, why don't you do anything for just for your daughter to see you in? And I think Paul was feeling a little bit guilty. And then when he got submitted the role of Eight Below, aside from liking the script, I think he felt he really wanted to make a movie his seven-year-old daughter could see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the real motivation in it.
Okay.
So we actually shot Running Scared probably maybe 8 months to a year before he took on the role of Eight Below.
Okay, all right. Well, one wonders, you know, they obviously made a call that this is not a fall film, so they decided early part of 06. Was there ever any talk of it being out in 05? I mean, obviously, since you must have had it done a long time ago.
You know, we spent a lot of time in editing trying to get it right. There were, I mean, it might not seem to the eye, there were a lot of visual effects. We were doing a movie that was independently financed,
yeah.
which we, you know, the company that financed it, Media 8, did their testing. When they felt satisfied, I think they were getting ready to show it to distributors, and what had happened is New Line got hold of the AFM promotional disc, and they, you know, they were so impressed by what they saw based on the disc, they stepped up and made an offer on the film, and then New Line wanted to test the film, so that took a little bit more time.
Okay.
We didn't really make too many changes there. All along, you know, whether it be Mediate or New Line, they really just allowed me to make the film I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then they had to decide how to position it, because they, it's not the kind of film that it plays well in Academy season. I think just by the nature of the genre it is. I mean, I think like somebody like Vera's performance is fantastic and might have got noticed.
Yeah.
But it's really just it's an entertaining, you know, genre mob film, and it's not the kind of film that draws awards attention. So it was going to be released in January 6th, and they pushed back because they were struggling with the marketing. You talk about the MPAA, and I touched on this with you in an earlier conversation.
Yeah.
New Line's had a terrible time communicating the real voice of this movie in trailers, because the MPAA will not allow them to show any of the footage with the kids in Jeopardy, which is most of the footage with the kids. They won't allow them to show too much of the violence. There's such stringent rules on what they can show in green band trailers. Nobody uses red bands anymore. But New Line had to resort to complete viral marketing on this film, including putting the first 6 minutes up on the website and creating a provocative game. Because the theatrical trailer is not this movie at all.
Right. Hmm. Do you see yourself at this stage, Wayne, as someone who's going to, sort of keep making these middle-range kind of indie-flavored films, or are you anticipating that you may, hire out just because you're good at the kind of thriller thing? And obviously you are. I mean, you're not just good, you're exceptional in my view. Have you been thinking about that, or do you want to stay in the kind of like, you know, make it yourself and put your own personal stamp? Where do you see yourself going in the next 3-4 years?
You know, I've been offered a lot by studios, and the projects really don't appeal to me. I find them very PG-13 and very much safe films. On the other hand, I am a self-generator. I like to write my own scripts, and I feel I understand my scripts and my movies better, and I storyboard them, and I take them to the next level.
Yeah.
So I feel my voice is better served by pursuing my own work, my own scripts. It helps me have a better rapport to actors. They know that I conceived the whole, the film, and I just tend to be more passionate about my work. I have considered one or two good films within the studio system, that have not quite happened due to maybe casting or scheduling or something. But I just actually closed a deal with the Weinstein Company to do my next film based on another original script of mine, which will be a fairly bigger budget than Running Scared, but not enormous. I mean, it's probably going to be a $25 million film.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just like Running Scared, it's going to be a very audacious, edgy project that only somebody like Harvey Weinstein, I think, would have the balls to greenlight.
Oh, great.
And it's a project called Evil Seek that Thomas Jane's going to star in. Evil Seek.
Two words, right?
I actually have it as one word, but you can, it could play as two words, too.
Okay.
And what it is about is every 1,000 years in hell, they elect a new Satan. And the reigning Satan has to come down to earth, take over the body of a mortal, and find his successor, the most evil person alive. And this guy, and Satan takes over the body of an FBI agent on the worst serial killing case in L.A. And it turns out the serial killer or killers is trying to summon the devil. So you have Satan on a collision course with somebody actually trying to, bring him alive. And at the same time, he's inherited, a disgruntled ex-wife, a promiscuous 13-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And Satan is the sole moral voice, in this universe. It's Satan finding his soul, kind of like Heaven Can Wait meets Seven. But I tell you, it is so freaky, this movie. And so, it's got more humor than you'll find in Running Scared. Some of it is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's also dark as hell.
That's an excellent pitch. Is that how you put it to Harvey when you first talked to him?
Well, Harvey, you've got to read the script. Actually, you know what happened recently is Quentin Tarantino saw Running Scared, and he's become a big fan of it.
Yeah.
And he was really effusive to me about it, and I was mentioning that Harvey was considering doing Evil Seek because it was getting lobbied for strongly in his company, and I think Harvey finally saw Running Scared. But as soon as Quentin saw Running Scared, he called Harvey to say Harvey how much he liked the movie. And I think he said, you want to be in business with me. And literally within probably a couple of hours. This is what I admire about Harvey Weinstein so much. He just said, you know, fuck it, I'm making this movie. It's ballsy and let's go for it. And it's going to be edgy. This is the one that's really going to put me, you know, in conflict with the MPAA, because, I mean, this thing is just NC-17 on the page.
I think it's hilarious. I mean, I just love the you know, the audaciousness of the concept, and it really pops out right away, and you want to automatically see it, you know.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's you know, I've been sort of chomping at the bit to sort of put my toe into the supernatural thriller genre.
Yeah.
And I like it because the guy, you know, the voice of Satan is just, it's not the typical Satan you've seen in films before. He's not a corrupter. He's actually exhausted with the amount of evil he's witnessed. You know, he just wants to spend out. He wants to find his successor and spend out the rest of his days as a mortal, and just gets pulled into this thing deeper and deeper, and the film itself enables me to make some social criticism about the state of our country today, which I'm pretty, you know, distraught about.
Yeah, that's another very funny idea. Satan exhausted by the evil he sees.
Yeah, it's going to be it's really going to be a cool movie in terms of style, in terms of voice, in terms of... You know, I just love the idea of Satan as a character, but who's not inherently evil. You know,
it sounds as if you were partially inspired by Al Pacino's big rant at the end of Devil's Advocate, which I thought was hilarious. I love that whole speech in which he said, "I'm a humanist, actually."
Yeah, remember? I do like that movie. I think this is far grittier than that. It's a cool ride when you read it, because it still plays kind of like a police procedural, but with the supernatural edge to it. And I'm trying to think of what kind of film to liken to. I mean, I think Devil's Advocate is an interesting one to pull at, but it's just something I always think about, like Heaven Can Wait, in the way that somebody has to inhabit somebody else's body. And
right.
and what the great thing about Satan is, you know, he doesn't have any supernatural powers as a mortal, but he has a nose for evil, and he's constantly bumping up against people that he knows are going to turn into rapists or murderers, whatever, and he goes into this whole speech of which ring in hell they're going to end up and what's going to happen to them. And he's almost like trying to dissuade them from going down the road they're going. I mean, he's it's kind of like, of course he's an old soul, but
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interesting subtext to this, aside from it almost being like having like a basic instinct format of
mm-hmm.
you really have to, I mean, if you want to read it, I can have it.
Oh, I'd very much love to. It sounds like a real hoot to go through, so. Do you anticipate making it sometime, in the middle of this year, later this
year?
Yeah,
I think we're going to move ahead very quickly, because Thomas wants to do it badly, and Harvey has made immediate deals with us to go on it. So I anticipate being in production probably by May.
Thomas
Jane.
Oh, I'm sorry, Thomas Jane. Great, okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. He's wonderful. He's, you know, it's funny, I had read something that he wanted to do, but it's kind of linked up with the Johnny Cash thing, that he was going to play this guy, Glenn Shirley, who was a prisoner who Johnny Cash took a liking to and encouraged for his songwriting abilities, and after he got out of Folsom, went out in the world and, I think, recorded and did a little, you know, had some real potential as a recording artist and a singer, but then his old kind of prison values...
Yeah, I read whatever. About that. I thought Aaron Eckhart was interested in that, but
oh, maybe it's still alive and he's doing it rather than Tom. But
yeah, I think Tom is just a really undervalued actor.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people haven't seen Stunder, which I thought was terrific, and I thought showed a side of him that kind of like Paul Walker doing Running Scared, where people have a perception this is like a pretty boy or a very sort of bland commercial actor. But I think he's got real, real solid chops.
Yeah.
And I actually love working with actors that are undervalued, trying to, take them to the next level.
Right. Okay. And he's now Tom, right? No more Thomas.
I call him Thomas. I don't quite know if he's committed to being Tom or Thomas. He seems not quite sure himself.
I think that they should decide upon it. Because when the Jonathan Hensley film The Punisher came out, he was definitely Tom, because they wanted that more of that kind of
Yeah, actually, it's got a better ring to it as Thomas.
It has more of a machismo thing with Tom, I guess, or, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels a little generic as Tom Jane. I like the Thomas part of it.
Yeah, okay. All right, well.
I'll have to put in his contract. He has to be billed as Thomas.
Yeah, all right. All right. All right, Wayne. Well, this is great. I'm glad to hear this, and please do get in touch with me about letting me read it. I would love to, and it sounds like a fantastic idea. But please, your fourth film, the next one after this, you should do, you know, like a mom and pop, family values, sweet movie with a dog and a cat. You know, I mean, just
I would love to oblige you, but I am so not going to be the filmmaker that goes to the PG-G genre. Not even for my son. I think he'll just have to enjoy the films when he grows up. But I will be revisiting. I have projects like a film set up at New Line called The Sleeping Detective about a narcoleptic private eye.
Okay.
I think something you would like, very Chandler-esque, very Chinatown, but every time this guy's stress level gets up, he just conks out. And it's almost going back to the sort of the humor and sort of the more textured palette of something like The Cooler.
Right, okay. That sounds good, too. Okay, man. Well, it was great talking to you again, and really excellent job with The Cooler, and I mean it with Running Scared, and I hope to...
Well, thanks. Thanks for doing the write-up on your website.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Okay, man.
Okay, take care.
Be well.
Bye.